ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let go. You're on with J&J, 929 FM ESPN. On a Tuesday, October 21st edition of the show. We got lots of Grizzlies news. It all came out yesterday after we got off. Now just a day ahead of the team's season opener. Tomorrow night down at FedEx Forum against the New Orleans Pelicans. Ja Morant will be available, we learned. That's great. Ty Jerome, as I'm sure some suspected, will not. News is actually worse on Ty than just not being there opening night. Going to be reevaluating 4 weeks. Got that news. It was actually a medical update from the Grizzlies I could understand. Had words in it I could understand. I appreciate that. For Ty, it's a calf. And that's unfortunate. Tell you what. Next man up already. And we've kind of been along the feeling that, you know, this whole preseason with guys in and out of the lineup will be good, though. Opening night to have Ja and Jaren. Because as the people tell me, when Ja and Jaren are in there, 60% of the time they win. Heard it from Jeff Calkins this morning on his show. 9 to 11, you should tune in every morning. And then you should stay locked for us. Because I tell you what, I got a man just as smart. Now, he's not Harvard educated. He's Memphis educated, isn't he? But he's gone from local star to national star. He went to Memphis, just like I did. His name is John Martin. Let's give him a round of applause. How do you feel, John, about the fact that you'll have John Jaren the opening night starting lineup to start the season?
I mean, I don't feel good. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't feel good. I thought there'd be an elation. No, I mean, I think you got too many bodies. You got too many bodies on the ground right now, I think, to be, like, credibly excited. I mean, you could be excited, like, in a Pollyanna-ish way, like, oh, I just can't believe we have NBA in Memphis, like that. But I just, to me, and I thought about this a lot over the last, you know, couple of days, like, we're putting too much on those two. We're asking too much of them. We're asking them to be more than I think they are honestly capable of being in terms of meeting the level that people expect. 60% clip, they will not. I feel very confident about it. They will not win at a 60% clip, even if they're healthy.
I think the thing about that stat is how many of those games were with Desmond Bane.
Yep.
Steven Adams.
Yep.
Or a big like Steven Adams
yep.
in the middle. So,
yep.
To your point, a little bit different than
I mean
what you've had with those two previously. Much
absolutely.
Different year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because like I think about it like this, right? What was the problem with the Denver Nuggets last year? The Denver Nuggets are a two-man game. That's what they are. They're a two-man game. They play through Nikola Jokic, and they play through Jamal Murray. A duo that is better than Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant. It's just we're talking about a 3 to 4-time MVP guy. It's probably going to be the favorite again this year in Jokic and Jamal Murray, who's an NBA champ. Now, Ja might be a little bit better than Jamal if you want to have that argument, but obviously we know Jokic is much better than Jaren Jackson Jr. And what did we say about the Nuggets last year? What was like the main talking point that we said about the Nuggets last year and why ultimately they could only win the first round? It was that they didn't have enough depth. They didn't have enough players. And they had Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Jamal Murray. And they still didn't come close to making a run.
Yeah.
And now we're expecting Jaren and Jada, you know, who we agree is a worse tandem to make noise. I just, without depth, I don't think that's a fair ask. I think, you know, hanging around and just having a striking distance shot at the play-in would be a miracle at this point, given their injuries, is where I'm at. I know that's kind of dour to come in here and say, but.
Yeah, I mean, I still think play-in is firmly within the realm of possibility. And then probably, you know, if you get healthy, depending upon how long Zach Edey's gone, I'm not going that far. But I get where you're coming from, and I think most of us do. That said, I don't think the Grizzlies are coming in this year expecting you as a fan or you as media, John, to think this is going to be the same kind of year. Not after you get off of Desmond Bane, and not after you...
That's right.
In a lot of ways, you don't address some front court roster needs in terms of win right now, because Zach Edey's out, and right now you're rolling with Jock Landale.
Yep.
We can get into the particulars of it, especially tomorrow, once right. This thing opens, but I think most are sort of with us in terms of anticipation for the season. It's wait and see.
Yeah.
Wait and see this new way to win around John Jaren, because that's what Zach Kleiman has asked us to do.
It's muted. There's just no doubt about it. It's muted.
It's a different kind of opening.
Yes.
Than it's been. Remember last year was bounce back season. People were excited. Let's get back to two.
Yep.
Right? This year's sort of, what are we going to be?
Yep.
And so to ask us to fake it or to ask any fan, I think is you're asking us to, you know, do something right now that would be based in faith.
I mean, in their promo videos,
fans want to
see. Exactly right. Yeah. In their promo videos on their social media account, they are using GG Jackson, Jock Landale, because they're one of the few players that's actually available.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where we're at. Like, Jock Landale and GG Jackson being in promo videos ahead of this season is like, whoa, that's not good.
Yeah, but again, if you have to go through this to get to a season next year, and you and I have talked about this, where it is a hopeful bounce back maybe a new cast of characters.
Yes.
You know, you would think it would involve the big two. Hopefully it does. But maybe you're back that way and you have to get through, John.
Yeah.
You have to get through this.
No, and now that will not
this
be.
This murkiness
that,
to get there.
That will not be a fun trek.
I think some of us have been preparing for that for a minute.
But greater later, I can buy that. I can buy greater later it's a lot easier than, you know, hey, let's make a run. You know what I mean? So
I don't know how many of you out here are still saying that. There's a few. There's a few.
But the game will tip off tomorrow, the opener, season opener tomorrow for the Grizzlies. We'll get into that today on the show. Jessica Benson is going to join us at 11:25. We'll talk to her about her feelings about the team, her vibes on the team, what's realistic given, you know, all the bodies dropping around this group right now. No Ty Jerome for a month at least. No Scottie Pippen for 3 months at least. Edie's timeline is going to put him at November at the earliest. So we'll get into all that with Jessica Benson at 11:25. Then at 1:25, Frank Bonner from the Daily Memphian is going to join us, and we'll get an update on, you know, is Brendan Lewis going
to
play?
Yeah, it'd be nice to know.
What's the health status there? That matters.
The problem is South Florida would like to know, too, and we get it this week, why Ryan Silverfield would be a little, you know, you're not going to give them anything that they can certainly construe as, okay, he's the starter.
Right.
So we get totally. Sort of. Being open with it.
Totally. So we'll get into all that with Frank Bonner at 1:25. But we have NBA opening tonight. We have thoughts on Memphis. We have Monday Night Football last night. We've got Major League Baseball. The World Series is set. Yep. And the way we like to attack these stories, we attack.
Congrats to the Blue Jays.
Congrats to the Blue Jays.
Yeah, winning a Game 7. ALCS, that's big time.
Big time for sure.
It ends here.
We'll get into that, but we tackle these in a nice and tidy little segment that we call Capital Cap. Let's get it. All right, the NBA season openers tonight, doubleheader, and you, Jason Smith, are excited.
I'm excited about the NBA season beginning, even though you've wrecked our open in terms of enthusiasm. I'm kidding. We're both in the same place on the Grizzlies. Yes. Neither one of us are charged with faking it here, right? But I'm excited about the season opening. I'm particularly excited the fact that Ja Morant is starting the year. Just our place, his place in the NBA, we've talked about it. Ja Morant wants this to be a takeoff year. That becomes a Grizzlies conversation. Can he do it? But it is a deal of, listen, Ja Morant's kind of been left behind. Whether it's the rise of Halliburton, who I know is out, or Brunson or whatever else. But in terms of the tier one, tier two point guards, you know, we're trying to bounce back, and so having him ready to go to start the season is great. Clearly, you know, I'm eager to see if the old guard is going to keep its place, right? That we could go to OKC and Houston and those teams that figure to be right there at the top. At least I still think so. But the Golden States, there are a lot of people thinking Golden State's going to make the finals this year. You know, whether it's L.A. and really Luka now, because we're experiencing the transition.
Yep.
Right? Whether they can sort of keep their place, or do they have to decide, like it feels like the Grizzlies have, we have to reset now. We're moving on. Remember, this is LeBron's last year of his contract in L.A. We're moving on from LeBron. We have to reset around Luka. That could turn into a let's see what we are reset going into next year for the Lakers. So the point is, there's your old guard there that have sort of been, you know, those teams that you've held up. Interested to see how the West is just loaded. It is. Look at that big, huge Dallas team that's down there. Athletic was talking about it today. I mean, they're as big as it gets, but are they going to have, as we've talked about, the point guard play that can keep them above teams like the Grizzlies, those kinds of things? Athletic doesn't think they'll be as good defensively as many think because they don't have a lead defensive guard. Think about it. Kyrie, D'Angelo. If you're going to put Cooper out there up top like they did some in the preseason, could he get burnt up? And so maybe that defense ain't so good up front. I could go down the list. West is just going to be fun. You know, now maybe the Grizzlies' place in it ain't going to be. But if you're preparing yourself for that right now, then I don't think this is going to be as much of a surprise. We had somebody yesterday say, you guys already talking. He said the T word, said tank, and you ain't even opening the season. Guys, just listen. This team's projected as a play-in squad by most that are – that's the some of the most positive. Now, we can go over to the Anthony Saints of the world, and God love him, I hope it happens, where the Grizzlies just surprise us all. But most have you as a play-in team. So you ain't so far off as that, if you are that, from being a team that's in the lottery, which is not so far off from that kind of talk. And so all we're doing here is projecting in terms of the realistic things that can happen. That said, I mean, how it all transpires, how it all plays out, yeah, I can sit here and say I'm with you, John. Man, what are the Grizzlies going to be? This could be tough. But in terms of the NBA season starting up tonight, yeah, I'm excited about it because the West is the West, baby. And it's absolutely still stacked. So we can make this about the Grizzlies and our place in, oh, man, feels a little bit different and this is going to be tough. And if you do that, I get it. Not as exciting. But if we're banking on you could bounce, it could be bounce back next year. If this does get super rough. There are reasons to still be excited even about the Grizzlies' position.
Yeah, I never really felt like I went without basketball this year, to be honest with you. Like I kind of feel like NBA is just constant, so I don't ever really have that much of a chance to miss it. So it's sure. I'm excited. I mean, it'll be interesting to see Kevin Durant. You know,
just re-upped.
Yeah, with this Houston team. But my excitement about the league at large really does hinge on whether the Grizzlies are relevant in it.
Understood. You know, you're in a city with a professional franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I'll obviously watch and pay attention, especially you know as we get deeper and deeper into the season. And there's some young guys for sure, like you know Cooper Flagg is going to be super intriguing in Dallas. You know, are the Spurs going to take a step? No doubt. You know, that's one I'm curious
about.
Absolutely. You know, so there's some storylines in general. The Lakers without LeBron, like. You kind of feel like he's sitting around hoping that they're going to stink and so that he, you know, can come back heroically.
Well, and so he can go back to Cleveland.
Yeah. So
that's what we're waiting on. It's always theater with LeBron, right?
It is.
And it seems
like
we're already starting off.
Well, Monty had to have a heart-to-heart with him.
Did he? I missed that.
He didn't actually talk to him, but he said, LeBron, like, you don't make the call anymore. Like, you're not that guy anymore. You don't get to...
But he's always been.
Yeah.
And so we understand a little bit of...
Oh, yeah.
You know, you come to that realization, probably hurts a little bit.
But that's why this has gotten so messy, because he doesn't dictate anymore.
Well, some of us have said for a long time, Lakers need to come off that.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be the best thing for the franchise, and my gosh, look what they pulled off.
So, yeah.
A new guy to do it with.
The other part of this is, like, as an NBA fan, how we're, like, going to keep up with watching it. You know, because so both games tonight are on NBC/Peacock. Does that mean they're only on Peacock or one they're on NBC as well? Do
NBC
we know?
As well, I believe.
Okay, so both of these games tonight are on NBC.
Yeah, Harrington talking about this. He's excited because it's broadcast, you know.
Okay, these are two
over
the air.
Yes.
These are over the air. Got it. But they will not always be.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I got to, you know, the Peacock NBC switch flip. Yeah, we'll have to pay attention to that. But we'll have the old music and everything else.
Tomorrow you have ESPN. Thursday you have ESPN doubleheader. And then at some point, Prime Video comes into it. Peacock exclusive comes into it.
We're all learning.
So I think I saw the stat today. Like they'll do this for like, you know, NFL, how much it's gonna cost to watch every NFL game. I think the cost to watch every NBA game this year is like $630.
Well, you can get into the Grizzlies tomorrow for $6. So you might as well just go.
You may as well just go.
We just saw that on ticket prices. Somebody tweeted them at us. The get-in prices for every NBA franchise, ours is six. It's the lowest.
Yeah, it's still NBA basketball.
I mean, it's Zion versus Ja.
Yeah.
Six. Charlotte's 12.
I mean, that would have been 6,000.
We can't say it's, you know, you can't say you can't get in or it's just out. The NBA prices are outrageous when you get the get-in six. I know you'll be sitting up there and blood's going to be coming out your nose.
Yeah.
But you're going to be in there.
I mean, for a family
six
of four.
Bucks, bro.
For a family
of four.
And I will say, for that experience, it used to be much worse than it is now, because at least now you have that big TV, that big old jumbotron in the middle of the thing. That's much better than it used to be.
It's at NBA Central, and I appreciate the listener who sent this in, Tyler, to us. It says that, yeah, get-in prices, Grizzlies at six is the lowest, Madison Square Garden, 233, highest.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting into, like, the Sonic Saver prices. Back in the day, people loved the Sonic Saver prices. And now it's like, this is a normal.
I don't think they can go any lower than six.
I mean, is that, like, that's before fees, right?
This is get-in prices. This is tickets via TickPick.
Because adjusted for inflation, that would be cheaper than the $5 tickets that people used to brag about.
I'm just saying, they're trying to get you down there. And it is Ja and Zion.
I mean, it is nuts to consider that is a $6 ticket in 2025.
There you go. This is the NBA. You're watching it. And you're a part of it.
As rookies, that probably would have been 10 to 20 times as expensive.
Now, back to your point about the Grizzlies' position in this, how it's hard to get excited. Can I read you the bold prediction from The Athletic? They did one on every NBA team.
Sure.
Cam Spencer and PJ Hall end up in the rotation. Now, how can we get excited?
That's exactly right.
And stand up on our feet.
And that doesn't even feel bold.
So again.
Or Olivier Maxence Prosper. Like,
I mean, bro.
One of those dudes.
Yeah. So that's where we are. So let's focus on the whole thing.
Right.
And that way we can get ourselves.
It feels
excited.
Like y'all have Ja Morant and Jaren like trying to hold back a horde of like, you know, zombies, like an army of zombies. And it's just like, all right, Ja and Jaren, just hold them back.
Well,
and
I don't
like,
even know if Gigi is trying to come through.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because
yeah.
I don't know if he wants to fight.
Yeah. Exactly.
Are you having to hold him back? I don't know.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe people, I'm always going to keep it like a buck with where I'm at with it. Like if I was like super.
We know.
Stoked about it, I'd be 100 like, let's go. Let's roll the ball out. Let's go with a chip.
You are excited about the season, though. That was
the
question,
season,
right?
At large,
okay,
yes.
Okay. We're both on the same page.
But
you should
within that, my excitement is certainly tempered because my expectation is the Grizzlies will not be that relevant in it. But again, through some things they can't control, right?
I'm just going to say it now. There could be excitement in tanking. Story later.
But the fan experience of tanking,
I get that,
will be abysmal.
But if it's tanking, not 4 or 5 year process, 6 year process, tanking,
right.
So
right.
You get a number two pick next to John. I don't, you know, right. Whatever it is, your
right.
Best chances.
No, it's true.
It's a freaking lottery.
I mean, it's true. It's two. You know,
I mean, you lucked up on Ja.
You lucked up on Ja. You did
that year.
You sure did. Yeah, you're right.
Let's not act like something special didn't come out of that.
And it made it worth it. It was a hard year, but it made it worth it. And you know, listen, there's other things like you can get like some cheap development for Cedric Howard. You know,
like you said, we're about to see if these two can be supermen and lead a cast of characters. That sure, you have some able bodies in there, but that's not a you know a high level playoff rotation.
Right.
We don't have to fake it here.
That's right. But we'll see. That's why they play the games, Jason.
I know. I can't wait.
UAB was a 23.5 point underdog.
Man, don't talk to me anymore about Alex Mortensen.
Yep. Maybe Isolo can be our little Alex Mortensen.
Out coached.
That's
Silverfield's quote.
All right. Can
stop. I get too emotional. We cannot do this. It's not a part of the cap and no cap, is it?
It's not. But speaking of the Silverfield quote, I have to get this off my chest. He has got to stop the whole, I need you to be sad. I need you to feel pain. He has got to stop that line. It is the weakest possible thing you could say. And you know what I'm talking about, right?
You worry about that line when I'm telling you about outcoached.
Well, that's what.
Against the interim.
Well, he said this after they lost to Navy last year. Yeah. This should hurt.
The players. I saw right. That. I just read past that now.
It's like, and he said it again last night at his radio show. He's like, if they don't feel pain, they should walk their – man, you should have walked your ass home from Birmingham because who is responsible for getting the players prepared? Whose responsibility is that? Who has to be accountable for getting guys prepared to play? Is it Ryan Silverfield or is it the players? The players have to police themselves? Is that what we're doing? Like, we got to retire that. Everybody's pissed, man. Nobody's sitting around saying, I'm not sad that we lost. Why can't you just say, I did not have my team prepared to play? Why can't you just say, I did a magnificently poor job
and that it's not acceptable for this university, rather than go this old tired-ass line of, oh, well, they need to feel pain. They need to be pissed off. And if they're not, they can walk. Dude, stop, man. Ain't nobody trying to hear that. Ain't nobody trying to hear that. All right? Of course people are pissed. The loss of UAB is a 24-point favorite, man. Like, that ain't the problem. That they're not sad enough in the locker room, man. The problem is that they're not prepared. That you came out there with the flattest effort by far, by possible. That's the problem.
Well, and then you flubbed it at the end.
And then, obviously, the game management at the end and trying to run the clock out. Man, no, like.
So, your past preparation, now you got a chance to win games, still blow it there at the end.
He thinks that quote hits. He thinks that quote actually, now, and it does not resonate at all.
I didn't know. Stop. I was working with John Francesa today.
I'm just saying, man. I'm tired of him saying that.
Can we go back? Are we going to be able to clip that up and be able to play it for later just to get that was Francesa-ish?
Do you see the upper left corner with the highlight on my notes?
John, he's marked it down.
Yeah.
That was organic. We had no plan for it.
Yeah, like literally.
But I tell you what I felt every second.
Like literally, he said.
Just like those Mets fans did.
I have the quote. September 21st, 2024, because I wrote the column. He said, I told those guys, remember this pain, remember this hurt, and you should.
And then they lost to UTSA.
And then they lost
to
UTSA.
Navy? Okay,
why are we still trying to do the, you need to feel this pain.
It's his go-to, bro.
Why don't you need to feel this game plan? All right? So this damn pain all the time.
I need to feel you running that ball.
Yeah.
Gosh, dog. Smith got 5 carries.
I'm just like.
What are we doing?
Honestly, it would be so much.
We're at the 1. It's okay.
Yeah.
We're going to pick up the pieces with Frank Bonner. At 125.
Yeah.
And then we're going to beat South Florida.
Yeah.
Because Ryan gets his teams up for the big ones.
Yeah.
That's what y'all tell me.
Ryan Silfield last night, this is from Jonah Dillon.
It's actually true.
After the loss, UAB, if they weren't heartbroken, I told them, stop the bus, make their ass walk back from Birmingham. All right, I'm heartbroken. Now what? Does that get us the win over UAB?
Dude, Ryan's going to use that to get you a win this Saturday. And then you're going to be coming in here, Monday, Tuesday, whatever it is, praising.
I mean, it's like. It's
for you,
like,
it'll be Tuesday.
Like, that
for
is
me,
just.
For me, it'll be. Boy, that thing worked.
That's right. It's like the single worst rallying cry ever, though. If you're not heartbroken, get off the bus. Of course I'm heartbroken. We lost a 24-point favorites, bro.
Nobody likes what coaches say after games like that.
I would have liked said,
Well, sure. They're the right things to say.
Right.
But then we're not going to go back and say,
you're right.
Oh, Ryan Silver, pat on the back because you took it upon yourself to say this was on me. I blew it.
Fair enough.
You know, we don't do that. But we will if you mess it up, and I'm with you that
he's already used it once.
Because that's coach speak 101 after a loss. Keep in mind, you're saying it about an interim coach 100%. With a backup quarterback.
100%.
What's that make you look like?
This ain't like you're losing on a game-losing field goal to a South Florida.
Again, just take it, like John said, just take this one. This one's on me.
100%.
I didn't have my players ready. Your players. That's right, because this goes back to you, and unfortunately, again, as good as the regular season wins have been, and as many as there have been, this has been characteristic of his teams, these kinds of losses. And so you have to take that, right? You have to take ownership of that. And I get where John's coming from on feeling like there's a lack of that. Go out and win Saturday. That's the way you, again, that's how you shut people like me and John up.
That's right. That's right. But I think he doesn't need to worry about the people being heartbroken. They are embarrassed.
His issue is getting believers again.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what, you're not going to get believers back by running your mouth.
That's right.
That's not to say, by talking, your quotes, whatever else, you get believers back by winning on Saturday and not losing games like you did this past Saturday.
All right. We'll come back. Jessica Benson will join us on the other side. We'll talk to her about the NBA season, Memphis game against South Florida this weekend. And a lot more. Stick around. J&J, 90.9 FM.
ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's
outside
not,
of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN. Jessica Benson is the host of the Jessica Benson Show. CJ Hearn on Grind City Media, part of the Grizz Radio Network. Grizz, of course, kick off their regular season on Wednesday. And Jessica, we're excited to announce, will be coming off the bench for the Memphis Grizzlies. She joins us now. How are we feeling? How are we feeling
I'm
24
stretching.
Hours out?
I'm getting ready, you know. The Achilles is a little tight, so I'm trying to make sure everything's all stretched out and ready to go. But I'm feeling good.
All hands on deck type. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, I actually have been in the process of needing to get toe surgery myself, and I've been putting it off. And I know the team needs me right now, so I think I'll put it off another 6 months.
Do you really need toe surgery?
What's going on with y'all's toes?
I really do. It's really bizarre. I have some weird thing with my toe where they keep telling me that the only way to fix it is if I have this like minor surgery. But you have to be in open-toed shoes for 4 weeks afterwards, and I don't want to do that, so I just keep putting it off.
Even the Grizzlies media arm.
You know, that's what we do here. We're all connected.
Is this cosmetic a deal where like the second toe is longer than the big toe?
No, it's not. It's like something between my fifth and fourth toe.
Okay.
This is way TMI at this point.
I'm sorry.
There's like a no. It's okay. It's like a toe deformity that causes those toes to kind of like rub together when I run. And so when I work out, it aggravates it. And the only way to fix it is a surgery, where I think it's kind of similar to the surgery that Scottie Pippen Jr. is having, where they remove part of the bone under the big toe. Mine is just on the other side of my foot. But mine is the kind of thing where, like, it's really obnoxious, but it doesn't keep me from doing anything, so I just keep pushing it off. But maybe I should get it so I can explain not only how to recover from an Achilles injury, I can also give the people the capital J journalistic account on how to come back from toe surgery.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, using and being eligible for the exemption, whatever the term is, because you have too many injured players. I mean, that has to be a new record.
A spectacular new record, I would think. You know, congratulations, we did it. We get the exemption before the season even begins. It's such a hard thing because, yeah, but cue the applause, some nice bows to be taken. But listen, I get it. Like, talking to fans around the city, and this should be an exciting period of time. By all means, the fact that we're about to see John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. available for an opening night together for the first time in years is something that should be universally celebrated in the city. And instead, there's this air of, oh, how does this keep happening as it pertains to injuries with this team year in and year out? So it's a challenging balance going into the season, that's for sure.
How should we grade Ja then? If John and I just talked about this before we brought you on. I think I heard Jeff say it's 60%, and you would know this, it's 60% of the time when Jaren and Ja are on the floor that you're winning the game in terms of the time that they've been on the floor together. Now, a lot of that's with Desmond Bain, right? That's the part you got to factor in as well. He's gone. So I'd ask you, with this new way, relearn how to win with Ja and Jaren, what's the proper way to grade Ja this season? We've talked a lot about availability. Is that where we have to start?
Yes. With Ja, I think it comes down to availability. And we've seen Ja Morant enough to know when he is on the court, he is the kind of player who you always have a chance, right? Like, very few of those exist in the world of sports, but he's one of them. And we have seen success when it's him and Jaren. And I think you bring up the really good point that Desmond Bane was the third of that group that aided in some of that team success. But the season was always going to depend, and I'm not going to change my benchmarks entirely now, but it was always going to depend on the availability of those two. Those were the two most important players going into the season. They are the two most important players for this franchise's future. This thing revolves around them. That said, I mean, it's just factual that you look at the hits that the depth has taken, and it was already a matter with the front court, and now you throw in a position that seemingly was one of the deepest on this team in playmakers and backup point guard, but also guys who could play on the wing alongside Ja. And it's just, it's a tough place to come from at the start of the season. There's a lot of youth that will be relied upon, but really when you think about it, there was already a lot of reliance going on youth going into this season, whether it be the assumption of both Jalen Wells and Zach Edey to continue progressing forward from their all-rookie campaigns to being meaningful starters for a team that was trying to compete this year. You look at the expectations that have been placed on Cedric Coward early and all of the lore building of moving up in the lottery to take him and what he could potentially be. And now you're faced with someone like a Javon Small, who certainly nobody was expecting that, you know, backup point guard opening night was going to be Javon Small. And on the bright side, if there was one kind of overarching positive from a pretty miserable preseason for the Grizzlies, it was Javon Small, especially in those last two games. But I'm taking an overall approach this season. The two words that I will try to rest on constantly will be patience and potential. And it will be a balance of those two things. But if you can still see the potential through it all, I think that's how we'll measure it in its totality. But it's going to take a lot of patience, and I know that's a hard thing to come from.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, I think it is obviously going to be about, you know, Ja and Jaren, but I don't think the idea was for it to be only Ja and Jaren. You know, right. Like, I mean, I think that's the that's the whole issue. Is like, I made this comparison in the beginning of the show. It's like, it feels like a little bit like what the Denver Nuggets did a year ago with Jokic and Murray, and they had again some supplementary guys like Aaron Gordon, who's a very good player. You know, Michael Porter Jr. has his moments, but they were mostly like giving minutes to, you know, Christian Brown and Peyton Watson and Strother, and I mean, obviously, I think the comparisons are pretty close there, and they have, you know, a multiple time MVP in Nikola Jokic, and I don't think anybody in Denver would say they enjoyed that year, and that's again with a 3-time MVP and multiple, you know, a real NBA player. So I don't know. I need more. And again, some of this is not really in the Grizzlies' control. I mean, you expected to have Ty Jerome ready to go. You hope to have Edey ready to go, and you don't. But I do think it could change the course of what this season ultimately is when you tabulate that information, if you're picking up what I'm putting down.
I'm picking up what you're putting down. But it's always hard for me going into a year, a season, an 82-game season at that, to already be forecasting that picking up, putting down, you know, like
I get that.
We'll see how it is after a week. It's one of those things where, I mean, it can devolve rather quickly. Like, you look at a team that plays 3 games in 4 nights on their home court. We're going to see the first back-to-back Friday, Saturday. So what's the availability of Ja and Jaren in back-to-back situations coming off a preseason where, you know, Jaren comes back at least a week earlier than originally anticipated, and Ja was held out of the preseason for the ankle sprain that he was dealing with. And then you go right into that next week, and it's like, I think it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. So they're just right back to it, and we'll have a pretty good pulse on what this team is going to look like, at least for this period, at least for this first month, right, where there's no Ty Jerome, and the reevaluation period being in 4 weeks, the best case scenario would be, okay, he misses the first month of the season. Then what is it reinserting him into the lineup look like? What does this become for Zach Edey? Is it a late November? Mm-hmm. Is it a early December? Like, all of these things will ultimately factor into, once we get to the trade deadline, is there worthiness in making a big swing this season? Is it something that gets kind of pushed back to the next season? All of these will be very interesting things to lay out as we continue forward. I just look at the first week of the season and I'm like, okay, I'm going to at least reserve some judgment on what the answer is until I see this team with Ja Morant on the court playing basketball come tomorrow night.
I don't think it'll be this disastrous, but I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we watched the Grizzlies start 3-13.
Oh, God.
Right? I don't think it'll be that. But it'll just be interesting.
That was the time.
You know, could it be, 6-10? You know, could it be, something along those lines? I think that's firmly within the realm of possibility. I mean, you're just missing so much. You're missing so much production. Like, you're missing Scottie Pippen, yeah. who I think Scottie Pippen is and was going to be an absolutely critical part of this team. You know, Ty Jerome, same thing. Ty Jerome was brought in.
The whole bench.
I mean, you go from having
potentially one of the higher-end benches in the league.
Exactly.
To you're potentially relying on two rookies in your, eight-man rotation. So what do? You're going to the bench after Jog, Kenny, Jalen Wells, Jaren, and Jock as a presumed starting five opening night. And then it's Santi, Cedric, and Javon. And Javon Small out of sheer necessity, because otherwise who's playing backup point guard? I mean, truly, if Ja does not play in one of the back-to-back games Friday, Saturday, who's starting point guard? Is it Javon Small?
Exactly.
Would have to be.
Yeah. I mean,
down on two-way.
The NBA regular season.
And therein lies the production issues, yes.
It's about depth, and the Grizzlies have been amazing at having depth over the last 2 to 3 years. It's not really about the compilation of talent. It's just like you don't have it available, and that's why I think like this could get rocky. Like I know that we have that 60% stat about John Jaren, but it also coincided with really deep rosters, which at this moment in time the Grizzlies do not have.
Well, and good defensive teams, because it feels like just that a lot of our face and palm moments could be on that side. I looked at it was 121 or more points they gave up, I think, in every game of the preseason. That was even in the win against Miami. And so, and I was listening to Harrington, and something we all know and probably I think is fact now, Jaren is better when he's got the big, when he's got better defensively as an anchor, when he's got the big center, mm-hmm. whether it's Steven or Zach Edey next to him, and it's certainly, Jock's going to try to do that. But I think I'm more concerned about what they're going to do defensively. You take Scottie Pippen Jr., one of those guys defensively, dogs that, brings it. You don't have, it feels like, a ton of guys to throw at that issue, right? The stops issue right now. You have an anchor in Jaren, but I'm not sure he's fully equipped with his roster.
Well, and you start seeing these kind of like holes on the ship, and you're trying to plug them all at one time.
Exactly.
So whether it be the defensive issues that come with Scottie being out and not having Edie available to start the year, and so what that means with Jaren and his responsibilities. You put the playmaking of losing Scottie and Ty Jerome, and then you look at the rebounding, which was also a glaring issue throughout the preseason.
Yep.
And how much can you put on the expectation of Zach Edie solving everything when he eventually comes back? Is there somebody who, that's where, like, when you go back to the eight-man rotation, does somebody like a John Conchar find his way to minutes legitimately in these first few weeks of the season simply because he gets boards?
Yep.
And you need somebody to get rebounds out there. Those are the factors that I'm really interested in from an intriguing standpoint, because otherwise you're in for a world of hurt. And if you have massive defensive lapses mixed with massive playmaking lapses mixed with can't rebound the basketball, things could get real dicey real quick. But back to that patience, potential, trying to remain above water here as we go into opening night.
All right, we're talking to Jessica Benson from Grind City Media, Grizz Radio Network. It's a new era, not just for the Grizzlies, but also for the NBA at large with media coverage and where you can watch. And one of the things that is interesting is this new sort of NBC and Amazon as they're launching their own shows and things like that. And one of the objectives seems to be, we're not going to make fun of the players. We're not going to insult the players. We're going to uplift the players. Will you miss? I mean, I know that inside the NBA is not going anywhere, but like, have we gotten too used to insults being hurled at the players? Like, I thought we enjoyed like making fun of these guys. Like, do we need uplifting?
I appreciate the NBA, or have appreciated the memification of the NBA, and that comes from some of the poking fun of, that comes from inside the NBA, that comes from the NBA just being a wildly wonderful, chaotic league. I'm someone who also loves college football for those reasons. I love my sports with a little dose of drama and soap opera-ness to it. I understand that. I think from a media standpoint, it felt as if the plot was lost a bit from growing the game, from educating about the game, from celebrating players doing remarkable things when you're constantly searching for a joke or the next bit it can get exhausting because you miss the actual sport that's being played. So I hope eventually it might have to be a hard course correct early on where it's very serious. We're talking about basketball, but I do hope we eventually get to the point where you can mix and sprinkle in some of the fun that has made NBA coverage one of the more enjoyable entities. Like, let me say it this way, one of the more memorable entities. At the end of the day, these are all TV shows. And so, you know, what are you choosing to give your attention to? I like to laugh. I like to have a good time. So that fit in a sweet spot for me. But some people appropriately really want more serious coverage of the sport they like. And to help the growth of the game, I think, is important. So what do we get? The Michael Jordan insights to excellence coming tonight. I'll be very curious what that looks like. Do we learn something, or is it platitudes and, you know, more of a PR spin on it all? That's the other thing. Like, does it still feel real, or does it all feel very perfectly curated?
You said you love college football. I love college football. I loved it more when I thought Memphis was going to be, I believed Memphis was going to be the Group of Five representative in the college football playoff. I've been emotional this week, Brian. I think John and I both have. We've been a little bit angry. Even where are you on Memphis football? And I suppose I would ask you this question more directly: is what was the most disappointing part about that loss for Memphis down in Birmingham?
The most disappointing part for me was watching that game on my phone at a wedding and finally getting the Wi-Fi password of the reception area and being able to pull it up and thinking that last DeRozier's touchdown was a touchdown and not realizing that he was marked short and putting my phone down in excitement to wait and come back and see if they were going to go for two or if it just goes into overtime. And then having to catch up and understand everything that transpired with the false starts and delay of game penalty and ultimately Memphis losing that game. I've just been really sad. And, you know, I think some of it's baked into the real belief locally of the at least potential for College Game Day. But even without College Game Day, just the setup of what would have been a 7-0 Memphis team hosting a one-loss South Florida team who's ahead of them in the AP Top 25 and a ranked-on-ranked matchup and a real opportunity to assert yourself not just as the, you know, kind of popular favorite, but the actual legitimate favorite for making the college football playoff. You would have had a game and a resume at that point that really stamped Memphis's place in that mix. And instead, you weren't given a whole lot of reason to be really optimistic about this team's chances against a South Florida team that hasn't let their foot off the brake or foot off the gas since they had that loss to Miami week three. And they've beaten the teams in the American handedly that they were supposed to beat. And that's something Memphis couldn't do. And it just left in all in a really disappointing place. I've been sad about it too.
I genuinely think it's possible that Memphis is settling into the worst place to be. Because if it was really bad,
good but not great.
Right, because if it was really bad, changes would be made so that you could get back to the ambition of being great. But if it's just good enough to where we can't make a change, winning 8 games, 9 games, that's blasphemous. We could never do that. But like that's all it really ever is. Like I think that really takes you to a very dangerous place. Especially when you're like unveiling all of these great big ambitions, right? Which is this new stadium that's going to be nice and done next year. You have power conference hopes that will never quite flicker out. I just think Memphis is dangerously close to settling into that. Which, you know, again, some people say, well, it used to be blah blah blah, but you know, when Memphis has the ambitions of being something that they currently are not, which is winning the American, but your hands are tied. I don't know. It feels like a pretty bad place to be, you know, considering the circumstances. Maybe I'm jaded. Maybe that's ridiculous to say, but I don't know. I just feel like you would want to lean into one or the other as opposed to settling into, you know, what I consider to be mediocrity if you're not playing in the American Championship game.
Yeah, and it's always the difficult balance of when does good become mediocre? Or does good ever become mediocre? Should there be glory in good? Or not glory, but acceptance, appreciation in good? I mean, we talked going into this season that it was always going to come down to the only way this would feel like a successful season for Memphis was if they made it to the American Conference Championship game. And that continues to be the case. Like, that does not change based on last week's loss. And I know there's still a path forward, but it just feels like a very daunting path at this point, an unrealistic path at that. And perhaps Memphis does rally. And we look back, and UAB is just one of those really weird losses that happens in the mix of a college football season that across the board has been more chaotic than normal years, and teams at the top look different, and maybe it's just a one loss and Memphis ends up in the conference championship game and we're still talking about a chance at the end. But I think the hard thing is that unless it does turn into that, then we will inevitably be talking about what will feel like a lost season.
I mean,
and
yeah,
that's a tricky position to come at from.
This is your six of Silverfield. I mean, this is,
yes.
This is not his first year. It's not his second year. This is year six. And so if it doesn't happen this year, this is what the program is. Like, you've had a 4-year starter at quarterback.
I mean, you still have the largest NIL endowment of your conference, and you still have the pull of money. That's what it really comes down to. So you can convince yourself that one of the years the money is going to translate into the actual conference championship. But until you see it with your own eyes, it's very difficult to say that with assurance.
If you were a Florida, and we just, we've all kind of discussed the Lane Kiffin thing and made a whole bunch of good, set out a whole bunch of good reasons for Lane to stay at Ole Miss. Would Alex Golish, make a lot of sense to you, having come into the Swamp this year and beat you? What do you think of that, of Alex and that South Florida team, just in terms of him as a coach and maybe being the Florida coach? Would that be attractive?
I think so. I mean, we see this again. It all comes down to money once again. So for Alex Golish to have the potential to upgrade into the SEC and have the resources that comes with coaching at Florida, me personally, I look at that Florida job, and I can't remember who brought it up this week, but in terms of a fan base that is rooted in some pretty significant toxicity, it would be a really hard place to go. And you're already looking at what just happened to Billy Napier, and he did feel like a cat with nine lives at some point. It's like the seat is hot. It's going to happen. Maybe it's not going to happen. It's going to happen. It's finally going to happen. Going into that situation, it's a hard situation. But I think any coach would take the chance to go from the American to South Florida. And so certainly you have someone in the state. It makes sense geographically. It makes sense from a point of the success that he's had at South Florida this season. I like this South Florida team. We'll see what it ultimately looks like. But at the end of the day, are you really, as a fan base and as a program, are you so confident that you fired Billy Napier and paid him all that money, and the answer is Alex Golish? That's where this gets convoluted. I mean, the same thing went for Penn State firing James Franklin, and people are talking about Matt Rhule. And I'm like, really? That inspires that much more confidence than the situation that you had? And I get it. You reach the end of the rope with somebody, and it's past the point of no return, and the fan base has turned, and all the chatter has turned. And I think we're witnessing it happening. I know they gave Mike Norvell the vote of confidence for the rest of the season, but that all feels inevitable too. Man. So this happens in the sport regularly, but we've reached this point where there's not a whole lot of obvious answers for that fill for the next group of coaches that are about to take over these very big jobs.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, I think we'll get a real feel of where things stand in the college landscape if Lane Kiffin doesn't take the job. So,
I wouldn't.
I would not. I would absolutely not. I'm rolling.
Got a
man.
Great situation.
I'm the man. I'm the man in Oxford, and I'm not so sure that my results in Oxford would be kosher in Gainesville. Y'all would probably be in my DMs talking, trash to me about not making the playoff. I don't care that you guys think that I might have a better chance of making the playoff at the margins. I'm going to get all the money I need here for myself. I'm going to get all the money I need for my NIL because they don't want to lose me. I mean, I just feel like I'm set, man. I'm comfortable. Like, why would you? And here's the other thing that I haven't talked about, but I think it's a good point. Like, he's sober. Like Lane Kiffin has found a stability in his personal life that has eluded him for the majority of his career.
He has his kids there with him.
Yeah,
I mean, his daughter and one of his sons has moved to Oxford, I think. So there, he has community.
I mean, that's a real thing.
Security.
That's a real thing.
Support. Yes.
Going back to Gainesville in Florida, where it's sunshine all the time and you're partying, like, he may not want to do that. He may say, you know what? I got my quaint, serene abode in Oxford where the people love me. No matter what happens, whether I go to a playoff or just miss, they still love me. We'll get players because we have gotten players. I don't have to risk any of this. I don't have to give any of this up for this to chase ghosts in Gainesville who've had two eras where they've been good. Urban Meyer and Steve Spurrier, and the rest has been an absolute mess. So I'm going to chill. I'm going to stay where I'm at, man. That's it.
Yeah.
So
grass is not always greener.
And then it will be Alex Golish. Because, like, what else are they going to do? I mean, every other coach in a similar situation to Lane Kiffin is going to say the same damn thing. Why do I want to go into that?
Now, Jess is right that the fans are not going to want to go down because they reach down because that's what you did with Napier. So you're going to go after all these big names. But to John's point, I think where we're all at is what you have to settle back on. You know, because I don't know that folks look at that Florida job as any, you know, sitting on some perch in the way that we would have, you know, in a previous day. But, you know, before this huge shift in college athletics. Jess, you've been great. We've held you too long.
Yes.
Appreciate you.
Oh, you're good. Yep. Yes. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you so much. Go Grizz. We'll be listening.
Go Grizz.
Yep. She is Jessica Benson. Joins us every Tuesday here on the show. It's interesting, like, I've been tweeting about Lane Kiffin in Florida and Ole Miss, and it's gone, you know, I guess somewhat viral. And so I've gotten a lot of engagement from people that I don't usually get engagement with. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see college football fans try to distinguish between recruiting well in high school and recruiting well in the portal. Like, it's very different than college basketball, where it's like recruiting in the portal is the way to go. And I still think recruiting in the portal is the way to go in any sport, in college football or college basketball. But they it's almost like Florida fans, it's mostly Florida fans, they think they're somewhat like good players from high school are better than good players from the portal.
Right.
Like they're trying to draw this line. Ole Miss can't be as good as in high school recruiting. So that makes us better. Like, first of all, those high school kids probably can't even play for 2 years. Right? So that, and eventually, yes, if they hit, it'll be great. But portal is like, you know, this is a year-to-year business now. You know, you don't get 2 years anymore to watch these kids come up and develop and all that.
Exactly.
Like, you got to be, you know, and again, unless you're Ohio State where you can have these kids coming down the pike or whatever and they're just ready to go, you know, you got to be able to win now and immediately and every year. And that's why if you recruit well in the portal, you're going to be one of the top teams in the sport. And that's what Lane has done at Ole Miss. That's been the weirdest thing. It's like they're trying to – it's somehow a good player from the portal is worth less than a good player in high school.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the case at all. In fact, it's probably the opposite. Because, by the way, a kid from high school can come in, be a five-star kid. He can still leave your ass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it's just – There's no guarantees about that one way or the other. And guess what? The high school kid, he might come in and be overrated and might not be the guy you thought he was coming out of high school as a four or five-star kid. Portal guys produced last year. I mean, that's just the way it goes. So I don't know. People are trying to, like, take a dump on Lane's recruiting because it's the portal, but I think he's got the thing figured out. Anyway. Thanks to Jessica Benson for joining us on the show. Lots more to come in the rundown. Frank Bonner going to join us at 125. Talk Memphis football with him. Status of Brendan Lewis and more. J&J, 90 FM, ESPN.
ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth.
plays a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARC machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.